I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to part two of this week's Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. On Monday's episode, we had a half-brother hitting fest with 2010's The Fighter, and today's sibling squabble is even more violent as Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton face off in fearsome fashion in 2011's Warrior.
I'm not the only one that suffered, Tommy. I didn't even know she was sick. I never even got the chance to say goodbye to my old mother. You had no right to keep that from me. That was not your decision to make.
Well, you walk around with your pictures in your wallet, and you're all, I forgive you. I forgive Pop. I forgive everyone, baby. You're full of shit.
So which film will be crowned the champ? We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Putters. Ahab, you godless son of a bitch. You stopped the ship, you godless son of a bitch. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Chris Tilly.
And welcome to part two of this week's Clash in the Sibling Squirrel. A sibling squirrel that is The Fighter versus Warrior. As you well know, one film will be declared the winner in the verdict at the end of the show. But before we get going,
we're doing Fanuary again. Send us your picks. Send us your pairs. Email show@clashpod.com and tell us why you want us to do those two movies in particular. The suggestions are becoming in thick and fast. We've had over 100 already on, and they're on the list on the Google Doc that you have access to, Alex.
I do have access to the Google Doc. Thanks, Chris. I love how sexy our pre-chat today is. Google Doc, all it needs is for me to say long-form video. We're hitting the gold standard of this show.
Friend of the show, Russell Ball, a.k.a. Bawley, he did send in a list. He sent in a few films that are pairings that he'd like to see, one of which was Warrior.
Great.
But he paired it with Kickboxer rather than The Fighter, which would have been good, but not as good as this. That was one of, as he calls them, Bawley's beauties.
Oh, man. I don't know about that.
We've broken through the glass ceiling. Google Doc, long-form video, Bawley's beauties. The holy trinity right there. Good, good. All right, so that is Fanuary coming up, possibly and most likely, followed by February Fanny. So that is the start of next year. Your suggestions, get them in with a reason to show@clashpod.com. All right, let's get back to the day. So on Monday, Vicky put up a fight, which means today Chris is following the Warrior's code in Warrior. Chris, take us on a journey.
On the surface, Warrior is about two estranged brothers whose family life was torn apart by alcohol and abuse. Violence has dominated their lives. Violence has torn them apart. Then violence finally unites them, the pair expressing love the only way they know how, with their fists. It's also a film about a televised tournament to find the toughest man in the world. Yet, no one, I repeat, no one runs through a brick wall at the end. If he was dead, Mr. T would be turning in his grave. He's not, I checked. and that's Warrior. He's not dead.
Good, good. That's great confirmation for the show. I mean, we are ticking boxes today.
We're so good.
So, I saw Warrior when it came out in a preview. I was, you know, a Tom Hardy fan since I saw Bronson. I think it was the first time he was properly on my radar. And so, and as I said on Monday, I like a fight movie. So I was very excited to see Warrior. And I haven't seen it since, which will be strange once we get talking about it, that fact. How about yourselves, Vicky?
I haven't seen it. I had heard of it. I recognised the thumbnail. Sorry, that's very much, again.
Fucking hell.
Bloody hell, sorry.
What are we doing today? Long form video, Google Doc, thumbnail, Bally's beauties.
I'm so sorry.
Mr. T's not dead. Fantastic. What an episode.
What brilliant, relevant content.
I'm not very well. I've got an excuse.
I'm so sorry. Anyway, like I say, I recognise the thumbnail on the streamers, but I didn't. Sorry, I'm going to call them on the SVODs. There you go.
Great.
But it's not my cup of tea. I like Tom Hardy very much. I like Joel Edgerton very much. Do you know what I'm going to do with you, Alex? It's too fucking long for me. That combined, it was enough to put me off. But you, Chris Tilley, I've always been very effusive about it, so I was excited to watch it.
I'm a bit like you, in so much as I'd read great reviews about it, and I'm a massive Tom Hardy fan, and I just never got round to watching it. And I think there's an interesting conversation, because we aren't alone in this. Like, this movie did not do the business. Potentially, it might have done. And honestly, I was trying to rack my brains for what it might be. And I think the image I have, I don't know what the thumbnail was,
right.
But for the long-form poster of this movie, I seem to remember it being them with their arms round each other.
Yeah,
like
from the back.
From the back, but was it from the back or from the front? Either way, no, it's the shot from the end of the movie that.
Yeah, you're talking about the ending, Al. Yeah, that's right. One of the posters they put out was the ending of the film, which is
madness
strange,
that they did that. Because to me, I'm like, right, so I'm watching this movie just waiting for the bit where they make up. It's insane that they did that. I honestly think that had a big impact. I think, you know, it's weird that Bally suggested Kickboxer, because I actually wrote down, if you're going to have a movie like this about MMA, the kind of audience who are going to go and see a movie about MMA, you kind of want your guys on the poster, like throwing a move or a punch or grappling or fighting, mm-hmm. as opposed to sort of arm in arm. It's like, it just didn't work for me.
Fair enough.
I'm done, Chris.
Okay, let's do a little bit of background then. So I've got some quotes here from a colleague of mine, Cameron Frew, who wrote a really good article a year ago on the 10th anniversary of Warrior. He did an hour-long sit-down with the writer-director Gavin O'Connor. And so there's some great stuff there, which I will be using. But Gavin O'Connor basically had the idea to make a story about two estranged brothers who were brought back together by violence. And he wrote it with a writer called Anthony Tambakis. He said in this interview, O'Connor, Paddy is my dad in a lot of ways. Paddy's the character that Nick Nolte plays, the father in the movie. My dad was an alcoholic. My parents split up. Me and my twin brother both went with different parents.
Ooh.
So it's incredibly autobiographical what happens in this film. And it's obviously very personal and quite a painful movie for him to make. But his big thing as well with putting this story together was, as he says, usually in these types of movies, you know who you're rooting for, and you can identify with one of the boxers. So the challenge for him was to try and make a movie where you didn't know who to root for in the finale, in the final fight. Did you feel that? Were you unsure of who you should be rooting for
at
the end?
Up until about 2 minutes before the end, where I realised I was being pushed in one direction, but that really up until like 2 minutes before, because then it was like, oh, I get it now, because you're coming from a place of anger, Tom Hardy, and you are coming from a place of love, Brendan, so you're going to win. But I didn't know that until, you know, right till the 89th minute
kind
of thing.
It's very good. There are a number of fights. Well, to my man, two two fights in this that you don't know the outcome of. I genuinely wasn't sure whether it was going to be both brothers fighting at the end at one point. I was like, well, one's going to lose and then the other is going, and then they're going to help the other with some knowledge on how to beat
someone. Someone was
going to
lose and then someone else would drop out or forfeit a place for some reason. So they never were going to fight each other, but then they had to.
Exactly. And I actually, when we come to it, I'm not going to do the end right now, Chris, but I have a lot of questions about that last 15 minutes of this film, and I'm not happy with all the questions that it creates.
Okay.
Because it doesn't fucking answer them.
Thank you for not doing the ending before we started talking about it.
It's just so tempting. Yeah, it just feels really satisfying. It feels satisfying because sometimes it's the best bit, but it's also naughty now, isn't it? It's like, could we do the ending and then get told off?
But because Chris currently looks like God on the screen looking down on us, like heaven on high, I'm more nervous about breaking ranks.
What
you're
saying is you have more
be.
Authority when you're not actually here, which is something to think about.
It's a weird one, Gavin O'Connor, though, isn't it? Because he's like, you feel for him a little bit because he's had a couple of great movies since Warrior. I mean, Warrior is a great movie. It's a shame it didn't do the business. Then he had Jane Got a Gun. I can't comment on that. I haven't seen it. The Natalie Portman movie. The Accountant did well. But then he did one of my favourite movies, The Way Back. We've talked about this. The one What's with that? Sam Rockwell in the water park and Steve Carell is a dickhead in it.
Oh, yeah!
Yeah, he did that. Right. And I was actually, is that him or is that The Way Way
No.
Back? That's a different movie. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Different movie.
I just caught
he did the one. He did the one which will make more sense, where Ben Affleck plays an alcoholic sports coach.
That makes more sense. That fits with his genre.
It's oeuvre.
Yeah, because it's The Way Way Back, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's the Steve Carell.
I missed a way out.
That's the Steve Carell one.
That's, by the way, though.
I loved that story. I was like, what a fucking pivot that is. I know, right? Good for you. Don't get pigeonholed. You can do what you want.
Yeah, if anyone's looking to talk about The Way, Way Back, you know, Fanuary's coming up. Pair it with something else water park based, preferably.
Gavin O'Connor, he wrote it to be set on Long Beach, but then they needed a state with tax incentives, so they moved it to Pittsburgh.
How exciting.
But I think it works in the films. It does work for the film. I mean, he said there's sort of a working class poetry to Pittsburgh, but he said it worked better photogenically. It worked better for the kind of characters he'd written. It worked better for the sport. He said Darkness on the Edge of Town, the Bruce Springsteen album, was an inspiration for the writing, and that feels like it's set in a place called like Pittsburgh. And so that's how it ended up there. He thought about doing it with wrestling or boxing as well, but MMA was exploding at the time, and maybe it was ahead of its time on that front, though, because obviously 11 years on now, MMA is much bigger now than it was then. Maybe it just was a sport that people were not in the mainstream interested in enough to go and watch a movie about it, because obviously you could apply this to any sport, this story.
I'm glad they did MMA, though, because for me, it's a brutal sport, as far as I'm aware. I mean, from what I've seen, it looks pretty fucking nasty compared to boxing. And I think this film does a really good job, because Tess, Joel Edgerton, Brendan's wife, in this, like, her fear about him going back to fighting and the scene where she's talking about him potentially getting injured, I think this is a sport you really feel, more than boxing, more than wrestling, which are kind of much more within the confines of a certain rule system, this feels like something where you could fucking get very badly injured quite easily.
It's just actual fighting.
Yeah.
I mean, the line later where someone's like, you do that on the street, you get arrested. It's like, yes, it's just fighting.
What was the thing that always went round at the start when MMA started to kick off? Everyone was like, it's literally you can do anything apart from there's no eye gouging or fish hooking.
Brilliant.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else goes. I just oil.
So,
just slip out of someone's grip. Like a little eel.
You'd oil yourself up.
So I'd be so oily. I don't know. It doesn't sound like there's a rule about oil. Can you imagine that? Someone tries to grab you and, like, because I'm quite thin. Just like, whing. You'd be projecting into the air and then come down crashing down with an elbow to the head.
Yeah, and then land on your feet perfectly.
Is it like Street Fighter 2?
When they were sitting down to write it, the thinking was as well, the exercise they did in their heads was, let's pretend only professional MMA fighters are going to watch this film. That's how authentic we have to make this. That's the most important thing. To get that right, everything else will follow. And that's where a guy called Gary Jackson came in, who's one of the most successful trainers in the sport. He choreographed everything. He trained the actors. And some of the philosophy in it and the stuff about music. That's all his philosophy. That's all his training ideas, and he's quite a fascinating character, actually.
Oh, the whole B. Beethoven the Ode to Joy stuff, the stuff that comes from Frank Grillo's trainer. Like, that stuff is all his ethos.
Yes, he trains all his fighters to classical music. They do their training in time to it. They do their fight moves in time to it. He talks about the notes that are there and then trying to find the notes between the notes, and that's where you can fight your opponent and catch your opponent off guard. And it's really interesting. And he, just like Frank Grillo's character in the movie, doesn't have pictures of fighters on his walls. He has pictures of Beethoven and Mozart and people like that. In terms of the acting, Gavin O'Connor did one of the great sports movies, Miracle, about ice hockey. And in that one, he taught ice hockey players to act, apart from Kurt Russell, who was his lead, but he was the coach. Here he did the opposite, because it was more about what's happening outside the cage. So he needed to find actors who were tough, but also sensitive and vulnerable. Tommy is first. So his description of Tommy, he's a powerful brawler. He's going to blast you. He's going to overwhelm you. He's all about athleticism and punching power. And he really liked Tom Hardy when he met him. Hardy moved over and lived with him for a week while they were trying to figure out if he was right for the role, which I don't think is normal in the audition process. But Tom Hardy, I saw him
I'm like, yeah.
Can you imagine? What are you doing here? I've come to live with you.
Yeah, Tom, I've got a film that I might get off the ground. Do you want to come and live with me for a bit? Just kick back. I'd like to have him in my house for a week. For sure.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, of course, yeah. How would that go down?
Mark would be fine about it. Yeah.
And I saw him talking.
Yeah,
he talks about this on the documentary, and he talks about this in. I saw him doing it on talking about this on Alan Carr as well. He really didn't want the role because he said, "I'm not blue collar. I'm not American. I'm not an athlete. I've never fought in a cage. I just
needed somewhere to live for a week in America. Do you know how expensive hotels in Pittsburgh are?
I was taking meetings for other films and needed somewhere to crash."
But Kevin O'Connor said he wanted him because the character underneath the rough exterior is a little boy.
Oh my God, there's no one better. That is in my notes. Like, he's like, I'll smash your face in, but I'm actually just a scared little boy. Like, there is no one better than Tom Hardy for that.
And this is what Gavin O'Connor said about the character. He said, he may be doing dastardly mean things and vengeful behaviour towards his father, but it's come from a place of deep, deep pain. I knew Tom Hardy had that. I also knew if I put a camera on this guy, I didn't have to do a lot. He just had that thing. I really believed him. It got to a point where I had to really talk him into it. So, yeah, a challenge to get him on board, but you can't imagine anyone else in that role. And then as for his brother, Brendan. So the idea with this guy is he's a tactician. He's not got the same athletic ability, but he makes up for it with technical knowledge, and he can spot openings and he can reverse a fight. And they said the challenge there was believing Brendan could be the best fighter in the world, but also is a teacher in a classroom with a bunch of kids, and he's dressed up as a princess by his daughters at the beginning of the film. And so it was almost more of a challenge to find the person that could do all of those things. But all the actors and the writers all said that sort of the spirit of Brendan lives in Joel and vice versa, that he was the one who was almost playing himself in this film.
Right. Was it even more of a challenge to try and make it appear that Joel Edgerton was actually the older brother for this movie? Because until the very end, I totally thought Tommy was the older brother.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he older than him in real life?
I don't know, but Brendan's character just gives off little brother vibes the whole time. And it's from the initial meeting with his dad, when Nick Nolte arrives and he's like, Tommy's back. And that whole conversation, he just comes across like his little brother and his big brother's come home. And he's like, you know, he wants his approval again. It's like, I think that's what he feels like. He's searching for Tommy's approval throughout this, which has a massive little brother vibe to it. So, yeah, it took me by surprise when it was the reverse.
Mm. And as for the father figure, Gavin O'Connor wrote it for Nick Nolte. He was a neighbour of his. He was a friend of his. But the studio were not convinced. He said in this interview that they wanted Harrison Ford play the dad.
No.
Wow, this is weird. On Monday, you weren't having Brad. You to call me out. I was like, I can't see Brad Pitt or Matt Damon doing it. But today, I'm totally down with Harrison Ford doing that. Okay. I could see that.
I'd like to see it. But this Nick Nolte is unbelievable how good he is. Like,
I mean, he's great.
Yeah.
The issue the studio has is that we've got these two unknowns in the lead, so we want a bankable name that we can put on the poster to sell the film overseas.
Yeah, I've got my business.
Which Harrison Ford brings.
Yep.
Got and my Nick Nolte doesn't.
Yeah, could have done more money. You listen to me in hindsight.
But O'Connor and his team sort of just went quiet and got Nick Nolte to join them in Pittsburgh.
It's weird. He's living at my house. So it's just, I can't say no now. He's been there a week.
He wasn't, but Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton and Frank Grillo and Gavin O'Connor did all live together in a loft during the shoot. I guess, does Tom Hardy never have anywhere to live?
He's got that vibe.
So Nick Nolte's already there on set, and O'Connor says the studio just tapped out. They were like, fuck it, cast him. So that's what you want to hear. So they had 6 weeks to prep, and the challenge was to make 9 fights exciting across the course of the movie.
Was it to have at least a couple of those fights where people walk in, Tom Hardy punches them and walks out? Does that count as one of the 9 fights? Because it feels short.
That's the most exciting fight in the film. Interestingly, Joel Edgerton was the athlete of the two of them. They all agreed that Tom Hardy wasn't as adept as Joel in the ring. And so that's why it kind of helped for their characters that Tommy's fights were short, because Tom Hardy didn't really know what he was doing, whereas Joel could do these longer fights because he knew what he was doing in the ring. So each day they do 2 hours of training, 2 hours of choreography, 2 hours of weight before they were doing the fight scenes. They all got injured. Boring injured stuff, but broken toe, ribs, finger for Hardy, MCL. They were having to halt fight scenes. I mean, it was brutal stuff. But the issue they also had was they had 4 of the best MMA fighters in the world in the tournament that they were fighting at the end. And so they had to train the actors how to fight. But the other thing they had to do was train the fighters how not to hurt the actors.
Right.
That was one danger. And then Tom Hardy said the thing he was most fearful of, these were professional athletes. I'm an idiot in the ring. If I accidentally hurt one of them, that could ruin their career or ruin their year or mess them up.
Confident.
And so there was...
Yeah, but what if I hurt
there was
you,
a
mate?
Lot of...
What if I fucking knock you out? Have you thought about that, mate? Tom, pull it back. We haven't started rolling yet. I'm just telling him, mate. Just tell him, what if I fucking knock his teeth out?
To be fair to him, he's the one that keeps saying in the behind the scenes stuff, I'm an actor, this is too much for me, I'm not a fighter, I don't know what I'm doing, so please. I don't know, I think he feels a bit silly, like, you know, we were referring to Mark Wahlberg as a real fighter on Monday, but let's be honest, these people aren't real fighters, they're actors pretending. No matter how much you've sparred in the gym in your basement or whatever.
Got Olympic gold winning wrestler Kurt Angle there as well, who I only know from WWE playing Cobra. He's great.
Are you a fan of his? Wasn't he sort of Mr. Stars and Stripes in the wrestling?
Yeah, he was a big ego. Well, I mean, not any of them are, but I remember from what I watched, and probably it's better to listen to Wrestle Me for information on wrestling than us, but fuck it, I'm a chancer, I'll give it a go. Yeah, he was. He had a beef with... I remember when I was watching, he had a beef with Triple H, and then he tried to get Stone Cold Steve Austin on side once by offering him one of his gold medals. He always wore his medals to the ring, very smug about his gold medals.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So he won. So he was a genuine wrestler before he did the entertainment wrestling, and he won gold. And I believe the gold he won, or one of the golds he won, he broke his neck in the fight and carried on fighting and won the gold.
Jeez.
Which obviously makes you a legend. And so, yeah, he was all about being Mr. America once he was in the wrestling. So it's funny that he's in this film playing someone who's definitely not American. I think he's Russian.
Yeah.
Cobra.
Yeah.
I love the fact that to you, that makes him a legend, and to me, it makes him an idiot. It's a different way of looking at doing things that could kill you. So, yeah.
Like Bert Trautmann, the goalie who broke his neck in an FA Cup final and carried on playing and won the game.
I was just thinking Bert Trautmann, yeah. It's a lot like Bert Trautmann.
So the movie kicks off with Paddy leaving a church where I think he's having an AA meeting, or he's found religion, the dad has. He's listening to Moby Dick in his car. What did you think about the Moby Dick sort of sub-story that was running
hated
through
it.
This, Vicky?
Hated it. Absolutely hated it.
I mean, it went over my head because I don't know. I didn't understand. I assumed there was some parallel that someone would tell me today.
God, so on the fucking nose. What, chasing the thing that's going to kill you? Blah. Like, Moby Dick fine, isn't it? Like, you know, the smart thing to do, have it on the bookshelf in the house. But to open the movie with it, you're like, oh, I see, the endless chase for the great white whale kind of thing.
He's chasing it. He's Ahab, or Tommy's Ahab, or they're all Ahab.
Maybe they all are in their own way. They've all got this thing, that this quest that drives them that will never satisfy them.
Right.
Whatever, fine. When you get smashed later, Nick Nolte, it's too much for you to be actually reciting it in your dressing gown. It's just too much. It's not subtle. And I know that the film isn't subtle. There's a lot of people getting smashed around the place and all the rest of it. But you've got to trust your audience to just understand that big metaphor without going, hey, look, Moby Dick again. No?
Right. But I imagine when he got nominated for the Oscar, that was the scene they played at the Oscars. That was the big moment for him.
When everyone's big, sometimes it's the person that goes low. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just this big craggy monster throughout the whole thing. Mm. The best scene, the best Nick Nolte moment is he's this sort of chastened ex-alcoholic trying to make amends. You can never be sorry enough, all the rest of it. And then when Tommy recruits him, and he just, the minute Tommy's like, look, you're going to be my trainer, when they're in that cafe.
Yeah.
And he goes scary straight away.
Yeah. You came to me.
Yeah.
You know, better the devil you know than the devil you don't.
And he's
give me your pills.
Terrifying.
Give me your pills. You sounded like a rocker walking through the door.
And he's like, what? He says something like, yeah, don't think you can keep changing your mind. And then you're like, oh, I see fucking scary you were. But he is a scary man because he's very big and you believe all the stuff that he did to the kids. But that's the best acting, isn't it? Where it's just like one sentence and everything changes.
Well, it's one sentence that he delivers later where, and against Brendan's wishes, he's always turning up to his entrance. And Brendan doesn't hear him because he's walked on, but he sort of almost says to himself, go get him, son.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, in one line, you know, gets you in the chest.
Yes. Anyway, don't like the Moby Dick stuff. Like it, but it's too much.
And the casting of Nick Nolte is interesting, though, because he's sort of facing his own demons in this film. He famously had an issue with alcohol. Kevin O'Connor said he had issues with his own family, those relationships there. And this sounds frightening. Tom Hardy said, acting is a contact sport for Nick. He's very connected to his black dog and his inner darkness. I wouldn't, even if I was Tom Hardy, I don't think I'd want to be facing off against that, even if it wasn't in a film.
So interesting that you say that, because I watched those scenes and I was like, bet Nick Nolte respects Tom Hardy. Because you know how Tom Hardy, he goes all in.
Yeah.
And like, I can imagine those two, and I think it comes across in this film when they're on screen together, but I imagine there was a real respect between those two as performers on the set of this.
Yeah. I've no doubt. So Tommy, we meet Tommy played by Tom Hardy, drinking on a porch. He's been away for 14 years, having run away with the mum based on whatever Paddy awful things he was doing to them. We learn that Paddy's been sober for 1,000 days. When he hears this, Tommy says, must be hard to find a girl who can take a punch nowadays.
My God.
So that gives us a sense of who the man Poddy once was.
How about the line, you didn't see her coughing up blood on her knees in a shit box with no heating, having me rub her all over the holy water because she had no insurance. It's like, holy shit, you paint a picture, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of pain in the words in this film, isn't there? And then conversely, we've got Brendan, who's married to Tess. He's got two daughters. He's teaching physics in Philadelphia. He's being dressed up as a princess at his kid's party when we first see him. But he's got financial issues. So him and his wife have got three jobs between them. And it's obviously to do with the subprime issue in America, isn't it? They're having their house appraised. It's being refinanced. He's missing out on payments. He's got 90 days. There's going to be foreclosure.
I mean, you want to.
So the stakes are high for him.
You want to get through that quickly. But do we really need the most evil bank manager in the world to show up?
What's his name? Emmerich. What's he called, the actor?
I don't know.
He's in
Noah Emmerich. It's
yeah. What's
Alex?
It?
It's Noah Emmerich.
Oh my God!
Of the face.
Yeah.
The untrustworthy face from Truman Show.
Yep.
Oh yes.
Yep.
Thank you. That was driving me insane.
It's just a bit. Yeah. So some of this money was for a Eudora's kidney, and Joel's like, Brendan's like, it's a heart. And he's like, nah. And you're like, oh my God, come on, big broad strokes here, man.
And in the background, we also see on the news that there's going to be a tournament called Sparta, which is the Super Bowl of mixed martial arts. It's got a $5 billion purse. I wonder if that will come back. And then the film largely cuts between the two brothers for the next sort of hour. First up, we got Tommy joining a gym, and he wants to fight a tough guy called Mad Dog Grimes, who calls Tommy Rocky, takes the piss out of him, comparing him to Rocky Balboa. And he gets his shot as this Puerto Rican fighter. It doesn't show up for the $200 to fight Mad Dog Grimes. And so Tommy gets in the ring to fight Mad Dog Grimes. Alex, what did you think of this scene?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love the fact he, because again, I think, you know, as you said, a lot of them are real MMA fighters. And so they look, even Mad Dog Grimes, who I know is an MMA fighter. What was his name? Eric Apple. So they just look like scary men. A lot of them look very, very scary, which I buy into because it gives the whole film an authenticity.
And then Brendan, conversely, is fighting in a strip club parking lot. He wins his first fight, but it means he's got two more to fight to take home the money. He gets home at dawn and he tells his wife he's not bouncing in a club. He's really fighting.
He's like, look at all this money. And he's like, is that 20 quid? Do you not think? He's like, but look, Tess, look at what I won. It's £20.
They're foreclosing on the house.
Can we concentrate?
Also, a school teacher's not allowed to pursue hobbies outside of school.
I was a bit down on this. I was like, it is an actual sport, okay? Yeah. But then when the principal, that's very, I didn't like that later when the principal, or the, not the boss, but the boss that then ends up supporting him is like, you've got to watch this on the telly. Like,
yeah,
kind
that's
of thing.
The principal, yeah. Yeah. Played by Kevin Dunn, fame, who's amazing.
Yeah. At first I was like, it's unfair because it's a sport. Teachers are allowed to do sports outside of school. But then he did sell it to me because he's like, you know, you were brawling in a strip club and I don't think they're allowed to do that.
Right.
And then so that
and he's getting paid, so it's it's another job.
I think you're allowed to have another job,
yeah, I guess,
aren't
so.
You?
Yeah. Fair enough.
Vicky, how do you feel about Tess, who doesn't want her kids to grow up with a dad who gets beaten up for a living?
I think Tess is... It all starts the way that you think it's going to be, which is... She, like, you know, I'm just going to be this person. I think it's a little bit crap. Because she's Tess, she's a good girl, she's got a cross around her neck, all the rest of it. She's like, for some reason, she's in her husband's tribunal, which makes no sense. When she comes on, she's like, so you've been suspended for 90 days. Why were you there and not a union representative?
And why wasn't he there? He seems to have been building like a little Lego
Wendy
piano
house thing,
yeah,
or whatever
like
it is.
That. And she's like, by the way, just so you know,
you're suspended.
Suspended. It's like, yeah. Did they not want me there?
Yeah,
No, tell me. I went instead.
I went instead as your representative. It's fine. This is what I was talking about in The Fighter. Who does she think she married? Why is she not into it? As in, she doesn't need to support him going back into fighting because it is super dangerous and she doesn't want him to end up with an injury. But I would have liked to have seen them met, or like seen like what drew her to him in the first place.
I'm very confused by the fact that she is waiting for the text to come through after the first fight. Mm. And this is how little I feel I've got to know Tess. When that text comes through and he's like, I won, and she's like, yes! I'm like, because he's safer for the money. I don't know, and I feel like I should know.
And also, not to, again, just to be this person, you can't do this to your women characters where she's waiting for the text and it's like, okay, actor, can you do waiting for text acting? Yeah, I'm pacing. And then she screams and she's like, yay, hooray! That's the equivalent. It's the movie equivalent of when women have pillow fights. We don't do that by ourselves to go, oh my God, baby, you did it! Like, yeah, it's bullshit.
You do.
We don't.
I know when I send certain texts, that's what happens at the other end.
It just shortchanges the character, shortchanges the actor. To imagine, Raul, right, can you do squealing girlish excitement? No.
It's all over the place, because she goes from, I won't watch your fights, to then literally watching his fights. Now, I'm imagining this Spartan competition is on an expensive pay-per-view channel. They're short of money. She's going, oh, rather than go there, she's paying for that. Yeah. That's not very frugal.
They don't do the granularity of the characters. There's a scene in the birthday party where Brendan has bought his daughter a present they can't afford. Mm. And she says it's called a budget for a reason, or it's called a... What did she say?
Yeah.
She's basically like, stop spending all our fucking money. So there's another scene there where she's like, you have got us into this mess and now you are going back to fighting because that's something you actually want to do, and maybe you've been spending like mad because you secretly have always wanted to do this. Let's have a talk about that.
We're not that cunning. We are.
Anyway, that answered your question.
We're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we'll be closer to Sparta.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So as we said, Tommy asks his dad to train him for Sparta and only train him. He doesn't want to talk to him. He doesn't want to be friends with him. This doesn't mean anything. In response, Paddy says he'll do it, but he wants his pills. Mm. Takes his pills off him. He's got to stay at his house because obviously, as we've established, Tom Hardy stays at other people's houses. And he's got to watch his diet and do his old regiment. The school kids get wind of Brendan's fighting. They see his damaged face. He gets in trouble with the school board. But he's pushing ahead with it. So he visits his old friend Frank at Frank's gym, played by Frank Grillo. Lots of Franks there. And he tells me he wants back in the cage and he wants to train and he's ready to start now. And we get a bit of drama along the way between Dad and Brendan. Dad visits Brendan, Paddy does, and wants to open up the communication, but Brendan basically tells him to sod off. And you sort of realise that Paddy loved Tommy more, which is another thing that's probably a connection between the films, is a parent preferring one child over the other. And here it was obviously because Tommy was the talented one. Tommy, he wanted a fighter for a son, and Tommy was the talented fighter, so he sort of he got all his attention, and that's why you learn as the film goes on, when Tommy left, Brendan stayed because he thought he'd get his dad to himself. Mm. And then sadly tragically that didn't happen. He still didn't give a shit about him. So Tough stuff going on there. But yeah, Dad never had any interest in underdogs. And Brendan refuses to find space in his heart to forgive Dad. Training montage!
Woohoo!
So this is a quote from Gavin O'Connor, who's a very engaging character when you see him in interviews. He's one of those guys that's very honest about what works and what doesn't on his films. And he says, when I was writing the movie, I was doing everything humanly possible to not have a montage.
Why?
Truly. I kept saying to Anthony, I'm not fucking writing it. I'm not fucking shooting it. But it got to, I don't know how to dramatise a passage of time in an artful way. God damn it. I'll have to do a montage.
That's
it
why
killed
they
exist. Me.
I need to show a passage of time. Brilliant. And it's a fighting film.
It's just one cliche too many. We're at overload. He also gives himself not a small part in the movie. He's J.J. Reilly in the movie. He plays the guy who puts up the $5 million purse. That's actually Gavin O'Connor.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Didn't know that.
So it's not quite M. Night Shyamalan levels, but it's not a small role.
I like the montage, though, the fact that it goes multiple screens, because I guess he didn't want to do a montage because every fight film, every sports movie has one. And then he was like, well, how do I do it different? The multiple screens on screen at the same time. And I think it's a good idea because this film is so much a two-hander, trying to give both fighters and both brothers equal screen time, that by having them on screen at the same time in different boxes, I just thought it's a good way of showing these two immovable objects heading towards each other, and it's starting to sort of build up that excitement.
Isn't it a bit of a wild coincidence that the two brothers get back into fighting at the same time? And wouldn't there have been merit in one of them has been working the circuit the whole time and is the best, so that when they get in the ring, it's just such a crazy coincidence that they both decide to start fighting again at exactly the same time, and then their paths cross at Sparta.
$5 million purse, Vicky.
Yeah,
that's come around. That's the motivation for both of them separately.
Yeah, okay.
But on that front, I sort of agree with you, Vicky, in that, yes, that's a coincidence, but then the fact that it's a $5 million purse, how many is it? 8 fighters, 10 fighters, and two new fighters on the scene who don't have recent experience end up in that tournament when obviously there would be 100 fighters better placed to be in that tournament. So Brendan convinces Frank to do it, and then I can't remember how does Tommy even get in the tournament?
Oh, it's just someone makes
it's a bit far-fetched.
Yeah.
Isn't it when he beats? Yeah. He goes viral. He goes viral because because he beats a Mad
Dog. Viral because of Mad Dog,
who's already in the tournament. And then there's a really sort of ill-explained, because I think it's all done in montage form. But Frank has another fighter. There's the other guy who's winning in races up the hill.
It's the injury. It's the injury. It's the injury in that scene we just talked about. But it's just a bit far fetched that through a phone call and someone going viral, they both end up in the tournament.
I'll lean on your car window and I will say please, and then that's it. It's done. Mm. I think you maybe needed to pass another test.
But equally, I can suspend my disbelief enough that I've got no problem that these two brothers are suddenly in this tournament.
Yeah.
So an hour in, we're at Atlantic City.
Sparta! I've been waiting to do it. It's the second half of the movie. Like, literally, when this starts, I'm like, yes.
Thank God.
A little bit. Unlike Chris, I really didn't like the montage in different boxes. It felt so at odds with the rest of the film's aesthetic, which was kind of like very sort of like dramery and real. And suddenly you got these boxes floating around the screen. I was like, no, not into that.
So that Sparta organizer that Gavin O'Connor plays, it's based on Dana White. I don't know if you know him. He's sort of the larger than life guy who runs MMA in the States. And he was going to be played by a guy called Charles Mask Lewis Jr., who is quite famous in that world. He created a clothing line, and he was just a big part of bringing MMA to the masses. And then he died in a car crash a couple of weeks before they started shooting, and the film's dedicated to him at the end. But he is this larger-than-life character like Dana White or Don King-style figure. And so for them to then cast Gavin O'Connor, who just sort of melts into the background as that character, I just think it does a real disservice to the film. Like, I think that should have been
when you say a they big cast character. Gavin O'Connor cast Gavin O'Connor. There's no they. He did it himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a banker, though. He does. It would have worked both ways. It certainly would have worked with a big, larger than life character in that role. But it also works like he seems like just a money man.
Like a playboy.
Like who wants to hang out with all these fighters and be the center of attention.
Yeah, super rich, his way into
exactly.
something. That's honestly what I thought.
I like that.
Yeah, I guess it's a different character, I'm guessing, to the one he'd written. Because, as I say, if you see this guy who was supposed to play and the guy that sadly passed away, it would have been a very different performance. And so we have a scene in Atlantic City where Brendan and Tommy, the brothers, meet on the beach.
Oh, my God.
Walk towards each other like something out of a Western. Like a pair of old gold gunslingers, I wrote down.
It's sort
of heading
awesome.
Towards each other.
I thought the dialogue is incredible. Like when he says, when Tommy says to Brendan, "And who are you exactly?"
And then he goes, it's great, and I'm your brother. I didn't know you were in the Corps.
Yes! Like,
I wasn't.
There's a lot of Tom Hardy doing this, which doesn't work for a podcast, but he's down here and he's
looking up.
Who are you exactly? Yeah. But it's just brutal. Like, to say that to your brother, that's the big brother, little brother thing. I was disappointed when it was clear that Brendan was the big brother because he was giving off these other vibes. But then everything then just like fell into place for me. Like, how brave it is and how tragic and sad it is to tell this story about the boy that got away had the shit life and the boy that stayed had the good life. And then it made sense because the little brother left and probably thought his big brother was going to come with him and didn't, and he couldn't manage without him, and his mum died because of that. Like, that's really, really sad.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, no, Brendan was supposed to go. He was supposed to stick to the plan, but he didn't. And as Tommy says, you leave, you get to bury people.
And they managed to walk towards each other and away from each other on soft sand and not fall over or look clumsy. Have you tried to stride the way Tom Hardy strides on soft sand?
What I'm hearing is, do not have an argument with anyone on the beach because you're like, fuck it, I'm going back to the room. And then you've got to do that clumpy thing.
But you need this scene, obviously, as well. It's that thing we talked about in the Die Hard podcast where Stephen D'Souza, Die Hard wasn't working, and he realised it's because his hero and villain weren't meeting until the end of the film. And so it's very melodramatic and over the top, but I think it works. And it's heavy stuff there, but it really works.
We've already passed this point in the movie, but there's a really weird moment that I did not see coming that I liked, where suddenly we're in Iraq with Marines.
I didn't like it. Threw me.
You didn't like it?
No, because my brain... This is because we watch too many films. But I was like, I'm in a fight film. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm in a thriller? Like, I thought he was on the run and someone was going to come for him.
Yeah,
and
I quite liked it. It was such a curveball. I was like, I'm into this because I don't know where it's going. I mean, I immediately made the assumption he was a deserter. Yeah. That was my immediate reaction. Then we get the switcheroo where it's like, he's a hero.
What are the chances?
And then we switcheroo back to, no, he's a deserter and a hero.
I think the trouble is, for me, I think deserters, I don't think they're bad people. I'd be like, I'd fucking run a mile as well. So the anti-hero thing of like, oh, I get it for the soldiers where he's like, I ran out on my unit and I know that that's bad and that's your family. But to me, I was like, yeah, makes perfect sense.
But we'll tap into this when we get to the end. But I'm really confused. Like, the minute everyone knows he's a deserter, the military personnel in that room are still like, Tommy! It's like, your code of honour dictates that he broke that.
Yeah.
So it seems unlikely that you'd be like, yes, this guy. It's like, I get it beforehand when you thought he was a hero. Fuck yeah. But now he's a deserter and you're still like, no, it's fine. We've got over it.
Yep, the logic's the wrong way around.
So the film's building up the fights, and I think it does a good job of figuring out these crowd scenes that there are people in different location watching the fights for us to cut to, because every sports movie needs that.
Yeah.
And I think the stuff with the kids and the headmaster are the best.
No, it's rubbish. The kids go to the principal. They're like, "Principal, can we have the gym for a screening?" And he goes, "No." And the way that the kids all draw in together and the music's like, da, 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 and it's like, you are devastated because you can't borrow the telly for a screening. And come on.
Why do we hold that shot so long
as they walk down the corridor?
I'm waiting for the principal to run after them and go, I've thought about it. And actually, yeah, you can. It's a really weird moment.
The emotional heft is not right for four kids being told they can't use the TV. Yeah,
and there's no payoff to it either because they still don't get to use the TV. So they hire out a drive-through cinema or something.
Yeah.
And then the principal turns up and none of them go, yo, fucking dickhead, piss off.
Yeah, but
you wouldn't allow us
to think it's in the dialogue, but the body language of those four kids is one of being like, well, at least we tried. And it's like, you just tried to get the telly. It's fine. It's not a big deal. There are other tellies. I thought it was bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We're building and building towards Tommy's first fight. We get there. He walks in the ring. He punches the guy once, takes his mouth guard out and walks off.
great. Fucking great.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, can I ask you a question?
Brutal.
When we're at Sparta, why has a man got a goldfish in a bag? Is that? But I'm asking. I'm open-hearted here. Is that a MMA thing?
No, that's because he's a professional broadcaster, not unlike myself. Like, if I had a joke, he's already thought about the Brendan character
as a fish out of water.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
and so he's brought a visual aid.
Wow,
to back up that gag.
Because I don't know enough about fighting. I was like, is this like a tradition?
If you don't watch a lot of ESPN, this is the kind of shit that is always on.
Oh, I see.
There's like a show.
Okay.
Around the Horn, which I used to watch whenever I was in the States, and it was exactly stuff like that. They were like, hey man, this is your guy. Look, it's a fish in a bag.
All right, fine.
Yeah, he's a comedian called Brian Callen, and he's essentially playing a comedian called Joe Rogan in these scenes.
Right.
Who, you know, was an MMA commentator. And yeah, he's calling him Feeder Fish. He's being fed to these proper fighters, and hence he's got
the
a prop.
One who says Tommy's a complete mystery, he's Google proof, except someone's on the actual TV talking about him. He's a complete mystery, apart from we do know he was in the army and he saved someone's life. Is this true?
No, they don't know this yet because he's using Reardon as the name. So that's a big story. The fact that they can't find his records. So they find out from that video that the guy he saves from the tank, the guy he ripped off the door. It's like, all right, Hulk. But he basically says this guy was a hero. And so they know that, but they can't corroborate it with his actual military history because he's using his mother's name.
He's Google proof. Oh, okay, fine.
So Brendan's entrance music is Ode to Joy.
Mm.
What would your entrance music be?
When I'm cleaning windows by George Foreman.
Good. Mine would be Shampoo Trouble. Uh-oh, we're in trouble.
That's an honest answer. Yeah. What's yours?
Yeah.
I have a tiger.
Whatever. Oh, Glad All Over.
Oh, Island Tiger's
fucking
good.
Glad All Over.
Yeah. Supersonic. Supersonic by Oasis is what I would play if I was having to.
You're such a lad sometimes. And you're wearing a polo shirt.
You've got to have something that's going to make you feel like punching someone.
Yeah.
Like George Formby wouldn't do that for me, and nor would Shampoo. But, like, I don't know. You need something to sort of pump you up somehow.
I'll tell you, an actual good answer is Sheriff Fat Man. By Cart USM. Dun, 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 dun. Yep, I'm done.
Nice one. Good. All right. Brendan's first proper fight is he's got to break free from a sleeper hold. He won't tap out. He doesn't tap out. He makes it the second round. Kevin Dunn can't believe it. He trades blows with the guy. He does a scissors takedown. He holds him and the opponent taps out. And the crowd can't believe it. The commentators can't believe it. And Kevin Dunn's losing it. And I love it at this point.
Yeah, I've literally wrote down cry for the first time. I had tears in my eyes. Weirdly, when Kevin Dunn runs in and shouts at his wife, he did. He did it! I was like, oh my god, this is getting good!
No, it's getting bad.
Good. It's getting good.
It's moving
into
comedy.
Do you think the first half is better than the second half?
I like the fighting. I do like the fighting. I think it's comic relief for me that Kevin Dunn stuff. It doesn't have a place.
It feels like what Chris said. It's like the reactions of people watching a fight brings out the same emotions in you. And he feels completely like this huge release. And so I tapped into that because we're both watching the same fight.
It's just a bit silly. I think in a film that's been so dark.
No, this is where it gets good.
Okay.
He texts his wife, I won.
She knows what all women do.
If someone texts me that Palace have scored, I do a little cheer and a fist in the air and celebrate. I'm with Tess on that.
No, it's just a rom-com. I like rom-coms, know that.
You
but
don't do it because...
Because what? Go on.
You don't have that in you.
What do I not have in me? Joy?
And the ability to, if you got a text saying from Mark going, we just won the lottery.
Yeah.
You're saying you wouldn't be like, yes! You can't control it. It's a reflex reaction to some news that is so powerful that it just comes out of you. It's not like...
All right, give you more. I'm trying to say.
Right.
It's fine. It's fucking stupid, but it's fine, yeah. Right? But in a minute, Tess turns up to the fight. She's just told her husband, if you go off, I'm not going to watch you. I'm not going to watch you die, right?
Yeah.
So then there's a big decision for her. She's like, do you know what? I am going to support you. I'm bang into this now. So where is the scene as an actor? She's like, I'm in this movie too. Why don't I have a scene where I tell the kids, actually, this is fine? Because that's a hard thing to do. You've just said, I don't want my girls growing up in a house like this. So now you sit with the girls and you're like, okay, this is why it's okay. This is why mummy is leaving you to go and watch daddy get the shit kicked out of him. And that's a very, very naughty scene, isn't it? You've robbed that actor of that scene for whatever reason, probably a running time. Probably it didn't occur to you. And instead, you've got her prancing around like a child.
You can have both.
Yeah, you can have both.
I agree. Both. That doesn't answer my point at all. My point was,
I'm a joyless nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm a cold bitch. Fine.
No, that you overthink that sometimes, that maybe if you should have just reacted, like in the moment, like felt the emotion instead of gone, what does that mean though? Does that mean I have to talk to the kids about how our lives will change?
I've been known to punch the air. I do squeal. I squeal on this podcast occasionally.
Never over a text. Not once. Never.
I'm racking my brains. No, I don't think so.
Okay, we're done here. Chris, back to you.
So we see Cobra in action, and he's a battering ram, so that's terrifying. But we've got this sort of escalation of, I call them palate cleansers, where we can cut to these people. So Tess has gone from not watching to getting the text, so now she's watching it on the telly. Kevin Dunn is watching on his own. He's telling his wife. Now he's watching. His wife's watching with him. And so while the fights are building, the people watching are building. The kids are starting to get together to watch it. So that's all escalating at the same time. Tommy destroys another guy. He seems like an animal. He's like this force of nature. He storms out of the ring again, which for me, I'm starting to fear for Brendan the first time I watch this now, seeing what Tommy's doing to people and thinking of there's this possibility that he's going to do this to his own brother. And then if that wasn't dramatic enough, we've then got the scene between Paddy and Tommy in the casino.
Oh, that's good.
Really good.
Yeah.
It's really good.
A lot of...
Oh, the restraint. Yeah, like, he throws those dirty coins in his dad's face. And his dad... Basically, all you're thinking is, your dad didn't hit you. So that's good. But that's so big. It's brilliant.
Begging here with your little tin cup.
Yeah. Oh. And he's just always on the verge of tears. And that's why, like... Paddy's the best described character, because he's got so much else going on, because he is very, very sorry, but he's very aware of the fact there is nothing he can do beyond being present to make up for what he did. You can just keep saying you're sorry, but it will never, ever be enough.
I know, it's weird that it's almost like Tommy was like, I'm going to drive him back to drink, and only then
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's decided that's the most hurtful thing he can do to his dad is make him drunk again. And so that's what he's pushing for, which is brutal. But this is where we sort of, it all comes together, this sub-story. So we learn that Tommy deserted his unit after his best friend was killed by friendly fire. He was on his way out when he saw some guys trapped in a tank and he ripped their door off to save them. And that's why he's going by the name Reardon. It's why they can't find his service record. He's sort of almost undercover or in hiding. And he's doing this for the money for his friend who was killed by the US Army. That's the sub story that's sort of bubbling away while all this is happening. And so
Vicky doesn't where like are we it. Here? Do you like it though? We were talking about it. We covered a little bit of that earlier, but do you like this sub story?
No.
Oh, okay. I don't.
I had no problem with it the first time I watch it, and that's why sometimes I hate doing this job, because when we're really properly analysing a film that I love, and I'm just thinking, well, I'll do it in my change, but I'll tell you the issue I have with it when we get there, because that is my change. But so, yeah, he does drive his dad to drink again. He finds his dad listening to Moby Dick on tape drunk, which has shades of My New Year's Eve with Alan Partridge, I feared, watching that.
Oh, but if Tom Hardy gave you a cuddle, it would all have been worth it.
Six, Chris wandering around with a bottle of brandy in his hand going...
Give me a second series!
Aha! Aha!
weirdly close to the truth. But it is such a tender moment then when Tommy comes to his aid. He's like, right, you've done what I wanted you to do. Second. We can be even now. And he holds him and he's going to heal him.
Second writing down of the word cry for me. I was like, cry.
Okay.
Can't make a note of when a movie makes me cry.
Why? For the ledger?
Yeah, just how many cries it gets means how many ratings.
It's
rating.
Another thing this film does well is that, you know, Rocky has to set up two fights per movie, pretty much. Here, there's a lot of fights to set up, and managed. The next fight is the Mad Dog Grimes grudge match.
Oh, this is the best one!
Because Tommy made Mad Dog Grimes, made him look stupid, and so we've got a proper story here.
Yeah.
And the soldiers sing for Tommy when he walks out, because they don't know at this point he's deserted. Mad Dog Grimes has coloured his mohawk in camouflage to take the piss out of him.
Oh, wow.
And it's just... He says he's going to take Tommy out with one punch, and then Tommy clotheslines him, rains punches on him, and then poleaxes him.
It's so
and
good.
The commentator says, as he walks out of the ring again, he's leaving a crime scene.
Yeah.
Just brilliant.
So good. The way the narrative would normally go is it's a really tense fight and it's really close, and Tommy sustains an injury that then means he's not up to, you know, facing Brendan, and then he overcomes that, whatever. The fact that it's the quickest fight is so brave and it's so brilliant. It's almost funny.
Hmm? Yeah, perfect. And so the escalation continues outside the ring. So the school kids are watching the drive-in now, and Kevin Dunn comes to join them. Brendan's wife's gone from not watching to get the text to watching on the telly. Now she's flown in to watch it, and you sort of feel this love between them. You can see she's supportive but scared, it's because he's fighting Cobra the Russian, who looks like a brick.
Yeah.
And he very much destroys Brendan in the first round, and he destroys him some more in the second round, and he's throwing him around like a rag doll. But Brendan survives the beating, and that's what this character's all about, that he's going to take the hits.
So this is where I started to think, this movie's great, because this is where my understanding of what might happen was breaking down. Like, I thought Cobra was going to beat Brendan.
Me too.
And then
because
Tommy...
Because he's fucking massive.
Yeah, because it looked like an impossible fight, and yeah, the way it was set up, which we were meant to think. And then Tommy was going to either drop out and let... Brendan was probably going to coach Tommy in a way that, listen, you can't do what you normally do. That one punch thing, it ain't going to work on Cobra. Let me teach you. And that was going to be...
bring them together.
How they were brought together to defeat this unstoppable Russian guy.
Yes.
He was like... to me, he was the end-level boss where they were going to have to work together to beat. So I was so shocked when Brendan won in this fight. And that's why this fight has got cry written down next to it. Because, again, I honestly was like, you know, you can anticipate movies like this. You're like, I know what's going to happen here. I know what's going to happen here. This, I was like, wait, I was watching it for real. Like, it was an actual fight that hadn't been scripted.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know who's going to win.
And they've made it believable because, as Gary Jackson, the choreographer, says, this is how the MMA game works. You get the big physical animals, but you get the wiry guys like Brendan who are clever. And for this fight, he said, it's all about not letting the opponent impose their will on you. That's how you fight mentally rather than physically, and can change the fight in a split second. And so obviously it helps. Frank's got a great line here. His trainer, so he says to him, are we here to win this fight? You don't win, you're going home. You don't knock him out, you don't have a home. Which is a really great line for a trainer to give to his man. And then Edgerton comes out and puts everything into that last round. And he gets him in what's called an armbar. And Cobra taps out. And then he's done the impossible and pulled off a miracle. And they've made it believable. When he walked in, you didn't think he stood a chance.
Mm.
Unfortunately, in the next bit, the military police come for Tommy. Because we know they know now that he's a deserter. But then they let him fight. I feel like if the military police arrive at a venue to arrest you, they don't let you go out and then fight your brother.
It's very generous, let's say that. Like, are they're just going to wait for you to finish?
Yeah. I mean, I think because my reading of it was that so much of Tommy's story is now out there on the internet, and the commentator is like, Tommy has pledged his $5 million winnings to his fallen comrade's widow.
Yep.
I was like, okay, well, you know, if you're going to stop a guy from maybe giving military wife. Yeah, I know. But I mean, within the confines of the logic of the movie, you're like, okay, I buy that.
The only way it works, which also is daft, is if the arresting officer goes into the locker room, he's like, get your stuff, you're arrested. And then he's like, I'll give you, you know,
that would have been a good scene.
Yeah, I'll give you 20 minutes kind of thing. Get it done.
But here, this is where the film starts to fall.
But can we keep it? Can we keep it just between? Can we keep it just between us, though, Brendan? Because if anyone else finds out I've just done this, I might lose my job. Because my job is literally to arrest you.
Yeah, that's so true.
So, questions for everyone here. So, knowing what's happened at this point, who have you got? Who are you predicting is going to win in the final fight?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I wrote down my prediction. Chris, did you have a prediction at this point, who you thought was going to win?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. I'm pretty sure that the first time I watched it, which, bear in mind, was 11 years ago, but I believe that I wanted Brendan to win, but I believed that Tommy would win. That's how I thought the fight would play out.
Okay. I think the film gives away its hand too early with one line, which is what I just mentioned. When they say Tommy has given his entire 5 million winnings, if he wins, to Manny's widow.
Yep.
The minute it says that is the minute I was, well, Brendan's going to win then, because you can't have Brendan walk away with nothing. And if Tommy's promised all 5 million, not a fraction of that, not half of that, which would then leave some sort of space for okay, he's going, and you know, that then he's going to give the other half to Brendan, and that'll be a surprise at the end. And this is where the film falls apart, because it doesn't answer very valuable questions in the end. But that's why I knew Brendan was going to win.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought either way they would be splitting the money. I didn't think that all 5 million would end up going to the when he found out what his dire straits his brother was in. I didn't think money was going to be an issue. I just thought I don't need to worry about the money thing now that it's two brothers fighting each other. But the commentators find out that Tommy and Brendan are brothers, so it's a huge story now. The world's watching, and this fight—it's so interesting behind the scenes. They storyboarded this fight. Every single moment of it, they created live action pre-visualization shots with the actors in advance, so every move, every beat, every line, every camera angle is choreographed, and you can pretty much watch it all on a video of them training for it in the ring with drawings and video and the real fighters and the actors doing it, and it's just so impressive. And that's, I think that's why it's such an exciting fight, to be honest, because round one Tommy wins and then hits his brother after the horn blows, which I think is an awesome moment. And then they're just in the break, they're just staring at each other, and Tommy doesn't even sit down in the first break. And that's sort of the staring thing is something Mike Tyson used to do. So when Mike Tyson was walking to the ring, once he got near enough the ring to see his opponent in the ring already, he'd start staring at him, and he continued staring as he got into the ring, as he was jumping up and down, as he was taking his off and everything. And the other guy would normally stare at him, but Mike Tyson would never take his eyes off the guy. And he said every single time, eventually they were the one that would look away first, and that's when I knew I'd won the fight, even before I'd ever punched him. And so I feel like there's elements of that there with these two guys just staring at each other, and they're not listening to the world around them.
Men are such a ridiculous thing. That's when I knew I'd won, apart from the few times that I didn't. But whatever. Like, it's an easy thing to say.
Yeah, but he was, I mean, he could have potentially gone through his whole life not having lost a fight, Mike Tyson. There were obviously other things. What was his famous line that he said, people who fight me, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face by me. and it was true, because but Tommy is a lot like Mike Tyson, in that he's like an animal, he's like a force of nature. He could be a 3 feet tall person he's fighting, but you think this guy's just got something different that is not of this earth. But Frank, you know, Frank tells him like it is to Brendan. He says he's not your brother, he's in your way. And so then they're into round two, where Tommy rains more blows on him. Round three, it's more of the same. But while Tommy's rage is sort of uncontrolled here, Brendan manages to slip out from under him and gets on top of him. And that's when he pops out Tommy's shoulder.
Jesus.
Thoughts on this?
I thought it was awesome. Like, but this is when I realised who was going to win, because it's anger versus love, and like which is more powerful. And Tommy's all by himself, and that's the thing about being like a vulnerable little boy. Like, even though he's got his army buddies, he doesn't have the emotional like ballast, the thing to shore you up, which is like Brendan's got his wife, then he's got stability, and he's coming from a place of, they both have pain, but he's coming from a place of love, and all Tommy's got is this anger. And then, and to the point where he's like a mad dog, like he's got one arm and he's like, I'm still gonna do it. But then I was like, I did wonder, I still didn't fancy Brendan's chances, even though Tommy's now got one arm. Like, I thought maybe something was going to happen because he's just, he's like a brick wall. Like, he's.
Jeez, this is what I'm saying. You don't want to fight Vicky. You do not want to fight Vicky. She can be an arm down. She's got an arm off. She's still coming for you. She isn't giving up like a mad dog.
Like a mad dog. That's but kind. He, so, what else today? Joyless mad dog. Nice.
Merry Christmas.
We got 10 minutes left, Alex. What, you've got time for one more. And so Brendan, Brendan is shouting him, what are you doing? Tommy, what are you doing? We don't have to do this, but it has to finish. Gavin O'Connor describes this fight as an intervention in a cage. And like what you say, Vicky, he says, once we got to the end and the tap out, it was like, that's the right ending for Tommy to be rewarded in the hands of his brother. Yes. Also, in the end, all this violence and masculinity, I really wanted it to be about love.
Yeah.
It's a love story, a love of the family. That was really important to me, driving towards the idea of love. And so even, Brendan, what's happening here? Brendan's hitting Tommy. The dad arrives, though he can barely watch seeing his sons do this. And round five, Brendan's nearly crying when he comes out. This is when I'm crying, Alex, when Brendan knows he's got to come out and keep hurting his brother.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to do it, but he knows it's what he has to do. And it's sort of this lifetime of hate and pain and regret coming out in this final round. And it ends with Brendan roundhouse kicking Tommy, holds him on the ground, and he says, I'm sorry, Tommy. And he tells him he loves him, and then Tommy taps out. I get emotional just describing it.
Yeah.
But they finally communicated in the only way they could, these two sort of animals that have been brought up as animals. And it's just, it's very moving. And it's sort of, it's supported by the fact that song comes on about today by The National, which him and his co-writer, they just played that on repeat while they were writing the scene because they were confident they would get it for the film. And that's what Gavin O'Connor wanted. And it's sort of, it's all this, the same message that by losing, Tommy's won because he's regained something. And Brendan saved Tommy by beating the shit out of him and killing him. And then he's reborn and he can sort of learn to live again. So he picks him up and he holds him again. And this time it's an embrace and he helps him out of the ring. And the dad smiles, Paddy smiles, because he sort of, he's pleased to see that his sons have found their way back to each other. And he sort of knows they're going to be okay, even if he probably isn't going to be a part of their lives.
Mm. All right.
So.
Oof.
Oh, journey.
Yeah, big stuff.
Yeah.
And that was a flop. So that film that film didn't make its money back. Alex, you talked about the poster being an issue. I think Devin O'Connor said that. He thought they should have released it slowly, started on 100 screens and platformed it because the reviews were good and it was sort of built it rather than opening it on 2,000 screens without a star in it and then, after opening day, sort of pulling it because it just wasn't going to make enough money. And they didn't. And so, it didn't make its money back, but it's had a life after that, definitely. I mean, weirdly, like, my dad has seen it, and I don't know how that came about. My missus, who doesn't
Tom
like
Tom Hardy came to live with him for a week, I think, and he brought it with him.
But my Georgina, who doesn't like films or boxing that much or fighting, she'd seen it and loves it. It's like 5 years ago. Her dad somehow had seen it and liked it. So I feel like it's a film that's sort of had a life since then. It's a film that people recommend or that gets passed around. And weirdly, there was a Bollywood remake of it in 2015 called Brothers that did make a lot of money. So this film found an audio version. And because of that, a spin-off series is in the works. Gavin O'Connor is actually making something at the moment. And the idea is that every season it'll have four new characters, with the only DNA from the movie being that they fight at a tournament called Sparta, and they're sort of trying to deal with the social and political issues of these people from different countries and different backgrounds who come to fight at Sparta.
I'd watch that.
So there will be more Warrior.
Great.
Yeah, I think he knows what he's doing when he's telling these kinds of stories.
I hope Tom Hardy's in one of them. And I don't know if you saw this, just that I like Tom Hardy. I hope Tommy comes back.
Well, Alex, this was going to be my final point. I don't know if you saw a couple of months ago video. He's now, Tom Hardy now fights in real life MMA fights, like local fights. And you can see it on YouTube and social media. Like, imagine showing up to one of these, an MMA fight down the street, and Tom Hardy's the bloke who shows up in front of you.
I think he won the last one that he went to. It was I remember he did.
Just sort of go, but no one really knew it was him. So it wasn't like there was a big crowd watching. He just sort of showed up with a beard and beat the crap out of someone. And then went and lived with him.
So. Brought his DVD of Worry around. Another one.
All right, Vicky, favourite scene?
The end. I was surprised at my reaction because when Brendan tells Tommy that he loves him and that gives him the permission to just let all this fucking shit go, and it all melts away, all that rage, and then the button with their dads, and I think he knows he's probably not going to see them again because they're done with him, but they're together and they're good people as well, really, and that'll do. It's all been worth it. His contribution, you know, it's gone somewhere to fixing the horrible situation that he created. And I wrote down cry at the end.
Oh,
just the ones. Just
go.
This bit. Oh, yeah, I was really sobbing.
Mad dog.
It's really good.
Alex.
It's the Brendan Cobra fight. This was the moment that I realised this film had done a number on me and I genuinely wasn't sure who was going to win, what was going to happen. And after this, I had my predictions. I think I knew for the final fight, so it's not the final fight. It's that fight. This was just so exhilarating to watch for me. And I'm a sucker for, you know, you're going to hate me, but Tess being there like, go on, baby, you can do it.
Jesus Christ. Really?
It's just necessary. Cardboard. It's necessary.
Yeah, but it's just such a cardboard character. She's just nothing.
She's not, because she wants Brendan to win and she supports him. She's loyal and loving and cares and likes money.
But it's also obviously it's not necessary in this film, but it's also just so true to life that in all these fights we do cut to the wives and the girlfriends and the mums and the children in the crowd to see their reactions. It's a part of how
the
it's
children,
sort of an expectation
what fucking
when you're watching
children? Who's taking children to
people,
see
people?
To see people get
got to get them into it early.
I've watched professional boxing matches where there's like a 6-year-old, 7-year-old son watching and crying.
Oh
seeing
my
his dad
God.
Getting
are
hit.
You, are you joking?
And I'm shouting at the telly, can you please take that child to the dressing room? I can't remember, this is about 5 years ago, but that seemed wrong. I'll say that one seemed wrong.
Yeah.
But, what was your best scene, Chris?
Yeah. Well, it's tough because Vicky's right. I haven't written it down as my best scene, but Vicky is correct. It is that ending, so much so that I was nearly in tears just now trying to describe it, which is embarrassing. But
it's not embarrassing, Chris. Don't be such a bloke, even though you love Oasis and you're wearing a polo shirt.
Chris, you're talking about Warrior, mate. Can it, yeah? Fuck this, like, nearly crime bullshit. We're talking Warrior. Idiot. Jesus Christ.
Sorry,
but the scene I remember most from the first time I watched it, and what I sort of, when I'm recommending it to people, I sort of mention this scene, is Tommy's first fight in the tournament, where he knocks the guy out with one punch and takes out his mouth guard and doesn't even stick around to wait for the referee. There's just something so animalistic about that and so exciting and so thrilling that's my favourite scene. Most valuable whatever, Alex?
Well, it's a good time to ask me that question. It follows on from yours. It's Tom Hardy, like, as Tommy. And there's one moment, like your scene that you just described, your best scene, Chris. Yeah. Totally get that. But it's the moment that his own brother walks into the octagon and is facing him. And it's just the shot they picked. And it's like the way he's moving and his head lowered. He's like a fucking wolf, or it's like a really muscular wolf. The way he stares at him. And we've seen him like knock these people out. But there's something in the expression and that shot that it genuinely scared me. I was like, he's disappeared into this character. And he's just a monster in that moment. It's terrifying. So Tom Hardy.
Mine is Nick Nolte, actually.
Vicky?
Yes, because Nick Nolte, everyone is very good, but it's just about the characterisation. Brendan is damaged because of his dad and has gone to fight. Tommy is damaged because of his dad and has gone to fight, and then they heal. Whereas when you meet Paddy, so much stuff has happened to him before you meet the man in front of you that there's just more of a bit of an interest there for me as a character. Like, he could, you don't know how he's going to react to certain things. He could do anything. He could revert back to how he was. He could be on this mission to do good and all the rest of it. Like, there's just, I'm rambling. The boys are the way they are because of him, so I'm more interested in him.
Okay.
That's it.
Mine was Tom Hardy as well, Alex. So I'll try and do something different just to be different. I'm going to say my most valuable whatever.
Tom Hardy, mate. It's fine. He's great in this.
No, this is a good. This one's solid. I'm going to go for the muscles on the muscles where Tom Hardy's neck should meet his shoulders.
Oh, my God. That's mad. That's mad. It's like he's got two babies.
They're like these big. Yeah, they're like buttons, big buttons on him to make him do something. I don't know how you get them.
I don't. I imagine it's pulling up your own weight a lot. Like, I don't know. I couldn't stop staring at them.
You could feed a family of four for a month on them, whatever they are.
Odd image.
It's weird.
Troubling. on a weird direction towards the end of this episode, Chris. Tears,
I'm
eating
not very
Tom
well.
Hardy's buttons. Strange.
I'm not very well. Yeah. I've run out of paracetamol. I've got a temperature. What would you change, Vicky?
Manny's widow, Pilar, lovely Pilar, who's like, hey, Tommy, we're okay. We're not really okay. The kids are fine, Tommy. They're not really. We really need money. Mm-hmm. Give her some of the fucking money. Like, Pilar is just left hanging. Like, I need to know what happens to her. Manny, we've gone to all the trouble of establishing Manny's family right. and his widow. And she's lovely, and she's like, it's so good to hear from you. So now she's just left with nothing?
This is so interesting, because I thought we were going to butt heads over this, because your best scene was the end.
Yeah.
And my change is the end.
Whoa.
But I mean the very end. Like, I'm down with all the brothers walking away. And remember we talked about this on Legally Blonde, and it's like when
yes.
when Elle leaves the courthouse, it should fucking end.
Yeah.
You don't need the big speech at the end. This... You kind of do. There are too many questions this film leaves unanswered at the end. So let's go through them. Is Brendan, like you just said, going to give any of his winnings to Manny's widow because Tommy was donating the entire $5 million to her? Unanswered by the film.
Yeah, they're brothers.
Is Tommy
brothers.
Getting arrested?
But that's fine.
Unanswered.
They're brothers. So
why are the military audience members still cheering yes. Tommy even though it's emerged he's a deserter? Unanswered. And poor fucking dad left there sort of like, well, the brothers have made up, but what is his relationship going forward going to be? Like you say, he's a fascinating character. Unanswered. It ends. Like, I don't need a lot. I just need 5 minutes more, a little epilogue, just something that shows me that things worked out. Tommy coming out of prison, like, you know, mm-hmm. X amount of time later and reconnecting and like Paddy and Brendan are there having like dinner.
A barbecue.
And it's like you did the
men.
Thank you. You did the right thing for Manny's widow.
Yeah.
Who's called Pilar.
Pilar.
Like, I just think all of that, like, there's just room to just tie off all these loose ends, and the film just leaves a question. And if you thought the same thing about what happened to Pilar, then, you know, I'm totally down with that. And also, side note, it's fucking ridiculous. And I'm sure on an aesthetic level, they were trying to say something about how the brothers have come together and then swapped and been the same or something. You can't have one of them fighting in one colour shorts and the other fighting in the other colour shorts for the entire movie and then swap them in the last fight. Because Tommy's always been in white shorts. Last fight is in black shorts. Brendan's been in black shorts. Last fight is in white shorts. And I couldn't tell who was who.
I didn't even notice. A good spot. Didn't notice.
I'm sure it's meant to mean something, but it was just fucking confusing. It is funny that we had the same change about that.
Yeah.
I just think it's such an easy thing to do.
I think if you hadn't spent time with her, where she's so lovely, you wouldn't give a fuck, really. But she seems quite nice.
Yeah, she does. And that's why I didn't get it, because, you know, that's
brave
why
to make it about friendly fire as well. I thought that was interesting. Rather than enemy
fire.
I
like that whole subplot.
I think it's actually, no shade on the director. I think it's weirdly directed for the movie we're in. I was like, oh, we're in Bourne. That's all I thought. And my brain was like, what the fuck is going on?
Because of the night vision.
And we just go to Iraq. Like, there's no transition. We're just like, I was like, are we in Iraq?
Yeah.
That's great, because my change was to entirely remove the desertion and the tank stuff. Because I just think it's totally extraneous watching it this time. I don't think it makes any difference to anyone's story, not even Tommy's. Aside from, it sort of takes me out of the story a little bit, because, oh, can a man really pull a door off a tank. And so he can still, I think he can still be doing this for his friend who can still have been killed by friendly fire. That's fine. That gives him some, that really strengthens his character. But I don't think you have to have all the other stuff. It's just a little bit ridiculous.
I just, if you're sat around workshopping it as well, like what good thing could he have done? Because he's deserting and he says, what was I supposed to do? Just leave them. Well, yeah, because you're deserting. But you, Greg, what could he have done? Could he have ripped the door off a tank?
It's mental how many times that sentence gets said as well. It's like they really love this idea. He ripped the door off a tank. It's like, then again, though, I guess at an MMA event, that is the kind of quote that the guy who was in the tank uses that people would pick up on and keep saying. So maybe it's realistic. It's just a silly sentence. It's so like this Tommy Smash.
Yeah, it is.
But by removing those two elements, you shave about 10, 15 minutes off the runtime as well,
man,
which
long.
I think would improve the film. And so, yeah, it just as I say, I hated doing this time, because when I realised this actually adds nothing to it, I really don't want those scenes in the film anymore. So it's a big change for me this week. And that's your lot.
All right, then. So it's time for
the verdict. Don't do that this week. That's such a big swing from you.
It's my week. Why would you steal my thunder?
I have little pep talks with myself every week about how to.
Why'd you bite then?
I'm going to get in front of this. I am going to get in front of it, and I never do. I can't think of anything funny. That's what scuppered me. Because none of it is fucking funny, by the way.
It's just irritating, difficult. It interrupts the flow of a show.
I'm guessing we've lost listeners over your inability to do this section.
Oh my god.
All right, do you mind?
Yeah, you go.
It's time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
See how easy is that?
Bellend.
Bit of tension building. Bellend. Haven't heard that in a while. That's up there. That's up there with, he ripped a tank door off. Bellend. Right then. I know. I think we're going to go with you first today, Victoria.
Sure. Okay. Right. Here we go. I think the fighting in Warrior, is easier for me as someone that doesn't really watch that sort of thing to get excited about. It's really clear where people might fail or not. And the fighter, I felt like Mickey, what I was watching, you said it in the last, a bit going through the motions for me, a little bit. But then the documentary stuff is really cool. Like you really feel like you're there kind of thing. The emotional beat at the end of the fight in Warrior is much more powerful. The brothers united, the fighter, the brothers are united, but it's like, okay, cool. Warrior is just a much harder punch for the brothers. I couldn't feel how angry Mickey really was. And you do get the sense of this anger so much with Brendan and Tommy, and something going on underneath Mickey would have been a bit more intriguing. But the thing is, all the family, the sisters, the social realism, the way that David O. Russell does that small town thing, I just think it does make it the superior film. So it's the fighter.
Okay, I'm going to jump in here. It's no doubt a close one this week. Christian Bale is a phenomenon in The Fighter. I know it's Tom Hardy, and there's a little bit of Tom Hardy playing a character that you sort of go, yeah, Tom Hardy does that well. I still think he's so fucking good in Warrior that he ain't far behind Christian Bale in The Fighter. The fights in Warrior, as you said, more engaging than in The Fighter. I'm going a bit around the houses here because I can't quite explain it, or possibly don't want to explain it outside of a therapist's office, but Warrior has such a massive emotional impact on me, whereas The Fighter, I just enjoy as a prestige piece of filmmaking and acting. And so because I was intermittently pumping my fist and crying my eyes out while watching Warrior, and I genuinely, it's been one of the biggest emotional movies for me in a long time. Definitely 100% in the end, Warrior. Chris, down to you.
Yeah, I don't know why you didn't pick me to go second, because as you well know, Warrior is one of my favourite films of all time. So this isn't really a fair fight. Warrior is my film this week, my pick. And Alex, it's for exactly the same reasons that you said. Exactly the same. The Fight is a good film. It's a good film, but there's something about Warrior that just pushes my buttons emotionally. I just get so swept away in the story of these two brothers. And on top of that, I get swept away by the fights and those performances. And I don't know. If you were asking me to pick my a great scene from The Fighter, I could maybe come up with one or two. Whereas with Warrior, I think like there's six or seven I could say are truly great scenes. And so for that and a million other reasons, yeah, The Warrior is my pick and this week's winner.
We have a winner and it is Warrior. Oh, can you smell the testosterone in the studio, V?
A little bit.
A little bit. How did you describe watching Warrior as needing to grow a set of testicles?
Is that what I said?
Yeah. Yeah. You said over the course of watching Warrior, you'd grown some
balls. I'd grown some balls.
Literal balls, yeah. all right, then. So Warrior is our winner. Don't forget, you can have your say. Tell us how right or wrong you think we got it when the listener poll goes up on our Twitter, at ClashPod. This is a little bit awkward, Chris. I didn't get your message. I know you bowed out because of internet issues on Monday's episode.
Yeah.
So we didn't get your clue. Chris's clue was great.
Much better than ours.
It was winging it. Unfortunately, the clue that you got left with was, mine was on top of a Christmas tree, which is a little bit Partridge. You might like that. But then Vicky came in with,
hello, Angel.
Hello, Angel.
Happy Christmas. Which is really good.
And so on the easy side.
Sure.
On the easy side. So
what do you mean? What's Hello Angel? What's Hello Angel mean?
Hello Angel, Happy Christmas. Because there's angels in them.
Is that a famous phrase?
No, but neither is on top of a tree.
Put an angel on top of a tree, or it could be a star. Could be a Star Is Born, that famous Christmas film. Anyway, we did you a disservice, Chris. So
you should have done. Angel Has Fallen. That's what the other clue was going to be.
Okay, so just in case we didn't get it.
The first film we're doing on Monday is It's a Wonderful Life from 1946. And the second film is The Bishop's Wife from 1947. And they're both on Amazon Prime and Amazon Freevee.
Okay, there you have it. Two of the oldest films we've ever done on the show, as far as I...
The oldest.
The oldest, yeah, okay.
I think.
Well, that's how we're starting our Clash of the Titles Christmas countdown. We're doing three Christmas clashes in the build-up to Christmas.
Yeah.
And this is our first. It is It's a Wonderful Life versus The Bishop's Wife. Have a lovely weekend. We'll all three of us be back in the studio next week. See you later. Goodbye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.